Good morning to each one here. And it's good to see you all again. Feels like we've been gone for quite a while. Yeah, 3 weeks ago, Siobhan and I woke up in the morning, exactly 3 weeks ago, and we weren't feeling the greatest. And by the time we got downstairs, Siobhan was feeling pretty bad. And so I took care of her that morning, and by evening time, I was feeling pretty bad myself. And so, yeah, thankfully COVID for us wasn't as bad as it was for some people, but it was bad enough. So yeah, I'm feeling much better right now, thankfully. Praise the Lord for that. And come back and see you all. And last night we were cleaning with the youth, and so I just, like, we were cleaning there. I was like, oh man, it's like I haven't seen all these people for so long. And yeah, so it's good to be back again. Some time ago, about a month and a half ago, maybe 2 months, Siobhan and I were at a family reunion, and there was devotions one morning, and we mentioned in passing a certain Bible character, and one of the family members mentioned something about, like, that Bible character. He seemed to be sort of a follower, like he was just a follower there, just a side note in the Bible. And that started me thinking. I guess I can be sort of contrary sometimes, and I like a good argument as long as it's upbuilding. And maybe sometimes when it's not upbuilding, but that's, yeah. I should work on avoiding that. And so, speaking of followers and leaders, the message this morning isn't about leadership or followers, but the character I want to speak about does relate to that. And so, who of you here can name some leaders in the Bible? Anyone, young or old, just name some. If you think of a leader in the Bible, who is the first person that comes to mind? Moses, that's a good one. Anyone else? David? Joseph? Elijah? Samson, what was that? Peter? Anyone else? Paul? Jesus? Mm-hmm. Yep, those are all very good. And just thinking of it a bit, and I was praying for this, I thought a while on this. There's three kinds of leaders, or authority figures, if you want to put it that way. What makes a leader or an authority figure? Like, what is one way that a person becomes that? Like, what is one way that one becomes a leader? Yes. Yes. Okay. Now you're getting a little ahead here. You're just too smart there. We're talking about, like, a leader isn't always a good leader. So there's that. Before we get to the good leader, what makes a leader? Like, just any sort of leader. And we're not talking specifically about a church leader. Just a leader or authority figure in general. Energy. Someone that's given responsibilities. So someone that's appointed or chosen to be a leader. That's more along the lines of what I'm looking at. So that is one type of leader. Someone that is chosen, voted in, or appointed to be a leader. Someone who sees his leadership for himself. Yes, that's a good one. And that goes in with one of the types of leaders that I have in mind, and that is someone who has the character of a leader in him. So, like, you can call him a command man or something of that nature. Someone that has the personality for leading out and going ahead, a go-getter. And that's one type of leader, someone that is naturally has the character for it, and he's not appointed to it, but he gets in positions of leadership because of his character. And then there's one other type, that is a person that is born to a position of authority. We would call them kings, princes, hereditary position. Now, those kind of people, they aren't necessary leaders in personality. They are born to it, and one that comes to mind would be, let's see, who would be someone that was put into leadership? Ahab. I would think that Ahab is someone that was born into being a king, but it seems his wife ruled more than he did. Yeah, it's hard to imagine a leader going to bed and crying over something he didn't get. That's sort of not the image we get of a leader, but he was a leader and a king, even though he didn't feel like it most times, probably. So, there's quite a few different kinds of leaders in the Bible, and you mentioned Peter, I think, right? Someone mentioned Peter. So I think Peter was the one that had the character of a leader. He had the personality of a leader, even though there was no appointed leader among the 12. But I think Peter naturally took that position because of the way he was. Even though you could say he was one of the lower ones, like one of the lowest born of the 12, he was just a fisherman, very rough, crude, but he got that position through his personality.
That's why I said energy.
Mm-hmm, energy, right. And then like another one that, backtracking here a little bit, Gideon would be another person that I would think of that was not a leadership personality. He was hiding, and God called him and put him in that position of leadership. There's Peter for the command personality. Who would be another one? I don't think Moses would be a command personality. Though that one, if you study about Moses, it's hard to say because he was one of the meekest people on the earth. But when he's spoken of in the Bible, it also speaks of him as mighty in word and deed. So there's that. Okay, and then can anyone think of a leader that became a servant, that became subservient to someone else? Anyone that comes to mind? A leader, an authority figure that voluntarily lowered himself to be underneath someone else. Does anyone come to mind? Yes, Jesus. I think he's the greatest example. But any other examples? Joseph? Yes, that would be, I think that probably would work, but more indirectly. More indirectly. But as far as someone submitting to a higher authority, a leader submitting to a higher authority. Can anyone else think of someone?
I think Moses very much served his people. Maybe he had that strong personality. Mm-hmm. Like, you look early on in his life, he was killing people. They weren't doing what he thought they should. But I think as God worked with him, he came to the point where he would have been willing to die.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I think David had some of those components, but it wasn't his name.
Mm-hmm.
He never wanted to usurp someone that was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He never fought for the king, like for the kingship.
Right.
That's a very good example for all of us not to, even if we're in a position of leadership of some sort, it's not our fight to fight for that position. Just like I recently was blessed by hearing of some people that were going through a difficult time, they were several families leaving a church, and that's always sad when that happens. But what blessed me about it is that they decided that God doesn't want them there, and they need to leave, and so they just quietly stated there what they feel is the issue, and then. Blessed the congregation and left. There wasn't a fight for the building, for the school, for things like that, even though they had invested years and years of time in that community. One leader that I can think of would be Cornelius. He was a leader, and he was fairly high in the Roman hierarchy. And that's basically what he told Jesus, that he's a man in authority. And under authority, and he submitted himself to Jesus, said that he is higher than he is. We won't be speaking of all those. And the person I had in mind was not mentioned today, and that's probably the reason why I will be speaking of him. There's a man that is known by one of his other attributes, not leadership. It's friendship. What man in the Bible is known for his friendship? Not John the Baptist.
Jonathan.
Correct. Okay, so he was a hereditary leader. He was a prince. He was born into it. I'm not sure if he probably was born by the time his father became a king, but he would have grown up a prince and in a position of authority. And as I read here and give some comments, I think we might have, we usually would think of, we would think of Jonathan as a follower, like David was the king and he sort of followed, he was like a sidekick for David, if you want to call it that. But I think that you will have a different perspective as we read these verses here. So I'll start reading 1 Samuel chapter 13. 1 Samuel chapter 13, starting at verse 1. Saul reigned for 1 year, and when he had reigned 2 years over Israel, Saul chose him 3,000 men of Israel, whereof 2,000 were with Saul in Michmash and in Mount Bethel, and 1,000 were with Jonathan in Gibeah of Benjamin. The rest of the people he sent every man to his tent. And Jonathan smote the garrison of the Philistines that was in Geba, and the Philistines heard of it. And Saul blew the trumpet throughout all the land, saying, "Let the Hebrews hear." Now, we're seeing here that the first mention of Jonathan in the Old Testament. And it's just a very straightforward fact. He went out and smote the Philistines. Then going on here, and all Israel heard say that Saul had smitten a garrison of the Philistines, and that Israel also was had in abomination with the Philistines. And the people were called together after Saul to Gilgal. And the Philistines gathered themselves together to fight with Israel, 30,000 chariots and 6,000 horsemen, and people as the sand which is on the seashore in multitude. And they came up and pitched in Michmash and westward from Bethaven. And when the men of Israel saw that they were in a strait, for the people were distressed, then the people did hide themselves in caves, and in thickets, and in rocks, and in high places, and in pits. And some of the Hebrews went over to Jordan, to the land of Gad and Gilead. As for Saul, he was yet in Gilgal, and all the people followed him, trembling. You know, you could say that this was a very low time in Israel, one of the lowest times. And I think if anyone that were there, we would be in trembling, and we would want to hide in the pits as well. In verse 8, and he tarried 7 days, according to the set time that Samuel had appointed. But Samuel came not to Gilgal, and the people were scattered from him. And Saul said, "Bring hither a burnt offering to me, and peace offerings." And he offered the burnt offering. And it came to pass that as soon as he had made an end of offering the burnt offerings, behold, Samuel came, and Saul went out to meet him, that he might salute him. And Samuel said, "What hast thou done?" And Saul said, "Because I saw that the people were scattered from me, and that thou camest not within the days appointed, and that the Philistines gathered themselves together at Michmash. Therefore, said I, the Philistines will come down now upon me to Gilgal, and I have not made supplication unto the Lord. I forced myself, therefore, and offered a burnt offering." And Samuel said to Saul, "Thou hast done foolishly. Thou hast not kept the commandment of the Lord thy God, which commanded thee. For now would the Lord have established thy kingdom upon Israel forever. But now thy kingdom shall not continue. The Lord hath sought him a man after his own heart, and the Lord hath commanded him to be captain over his people, because thou hast not kept that which the Lord commanded thee." And so this sets the stage for further on, where Saul, coming out of his humble start, becomes more of a, I don't even know what to call it, becomes more of a prideful leader, if you want to call it that. Someone that tries doing it on his own strength, versus depending on God, where he, in essence, goes ahead of God, jumps the gun, and offers the sacrifice himself. And so that was setting the stage there for Jonathan not being the king, and it also shows the kind of father that Jonathan had. And then going to verse 19. Now there was no smith found throughout all the land of Israel, for the Philistines said, "Lest the Hebrews make them swords or spears." But all the Israelites went down to the Philistines to sharpen every man his share, and his coulter, and his ox, and his mattock. Yet they had a file for the mattocks, and for their coulters, and for the forks, and for the axes, and to sharpen the goads. So it came to pass in the day of the battle that there was neither sword nor spear found in the hand of any of the people that were with Saul and Jonathan, but with Saul and with Jonathan his son was there found. And the garrison of the Philistines went out to the passage of Michmash. So it's basically continuing the same theme there, that Israel was at a very low point. There was no sword or spear found in all of Israel, except for two swords. Now imagine a country where there were only two guns in the whole country, and that was all they had to defend themselves with. I mean, in one way, it shows that God was their defender when Samuel was the leader there, when Samuel was the prophet. And I don't know, the Bible doesn't specifically say, but I wonder how much of Philistines attacking Israel had to do with Saul's change of heart in this time. Coming from God being the leader and defender of Israel, to a man, a proud man, being the leader and defender in Israel. So going forward here in chapter 14. Now it came to pass upon a day that Jonathan the son of Saul said unto the young man that bare his armor, "Come, and let us go over to the Philistines' garrison that is on the other side." But he told not his father. And then going further ahead at verse 6. And Jonathan said to the young man that bears armor, "Come, and let us go over unto the garrison of these uncircumcised. It may be that the Lord will work for us, for there is no restraint to the Lord to save by many or by few." And his armor bearer said unto him, "Do all that is in thine heart, turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart." Then said Jonathan, "Behold, we will pass over unto these men, and we will discover ourselves unto them. And if they say unto us, and if they say thus unto us, tarry until we come to you, then we will stand still in our place, and will not go up unto them. But if they say thus, come up unto us, then we will go up, for the Lord hath delivered them into our hands, and this shall be a sign unto us." And now, I think this passage here compares most with Gideon and his laying out the fleece. But this is not spoken of as much. I don't know if it's, I guess the story of Gideon is more idealized than the story of Jonathan. Or maybe there was just so much going on here, and then when David comes in the picture, that overshadows Jonathan. Yes. But I think over here that Jonathan showed more faith, more trust in God than Gideon did. And now, what Gideon did, I'm not bashing that at all. He had to have a sign. He was the kind of man and in the kind of circumstances that you want to be 100% sure that you're doing the right thing. And so, I don't think it's wrong to ask God for a sign. And God does punish people for distrusting Him, but He does not punish people for wanting to make sure that it's God that's saying, that's telling them to do something. Here we see in Jonathan a very simple, straightforward trust in God. He knew that the land of Israel was Israel's, and God wanted to drive the Philistines out. He had someone there that trusted him, that shows that that Jonathan had trust from other people, that he was the kind of man that had integrity, that people knew that he was someone to be trusted. As his armor bearer said, "Do all that is in thy heart, turn thee. Behold, I am with thee according to thy heart." And then going further on in verse 11, "And both of them discovered themselves unto the garrison of the Philistines, and the Philistines said, Behold, the Hebrews come forth out of the holes where they had hid themselves. And the men of the garrison answered Jonathan and his armor-bearer and said, Come up to us, and we will show you a thing. And Jonathan said unto his armor-bearer, Come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel." I think probably most of us, I guess older men or young men in that position, were like, "We got this. Well, let's go. We got it. We'll take him out." And what Jonathan said, "Come up after me, for the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel." And Jonathan climbed up upon his hands and upon his feet. And that just like, I think is a sign of his humility. I mean, most of us, yeah. I mean, we'd probably go around, try finding the way we could walk to there. But it wasn't an easy journey there. And you could almost say he was praying as he was going up there. Climbed up on his hands and upon his feet, and his armor bearer after him, and they fell before Jonathan, and his armor bearer slew after him. And that first slaughter which Jonathan and his armor bearer made was about 20 men within, as it were, a half acre of land, which a yoke of oxen might plow. Now, there's some question about how what this means here. Their acre of land isn't the same as our acre of land today. So, a half acre of land, scholars say that it probably was a bit little smaller than what we would have today, but because oxen, they took a while to plow. So maybe it was the size of half this, maybe two-thirds of this building here. And so it basically, the Philistines were on a ridge. It was like an outpost there. And so Jonathan took them out there, and then further on here. And there was a trembling in the host and in the field and among all the people and the garrison and the spoilers. They also trembled, and the earth quaked. So it was a very great trembling. I think in the original Hebrew, then it says they also trembled. I think it says they also trembled from God. And you would think, like, if someone comes and takes out 30 of your troops, that's not great, but it's also, if you have soldiers as the sand of the sea for multitude, that's a drop in the bucket. But when God is there, and when God sends the trembling and the earth, and makes the earthquake, then that makes all the difference. And the watchmen of Saul in Gibeah of Benjamin looked, and behold, the multitude melted away, and they went on beating down one another. So it literally was what Jonathan had said. For the Lord hath delivered them into the hand of Israel. And then going further here, verse 20. And Saul and all the people that were with him assembled themselves, and they came to the battle, and behold, every man's sword was against his fellow, and there was a very great discomfiture. Moreover, the Hebrews that were with the Philistines before that time, which went up from them into the camp from the country round about, even they also turned to be with the Israelites that were with Saul and Jonathan. That, I think that kind of sounds like many of us, or maybe all of us have that to a certain degree in our heart. When the going is good, we're good. When the going goes bad, we try jumping ship to get to the place where we see is going to be easier for us. And verse 22, likewise, all the men of Israel which had hid themselves in Mount Ephraim, when they heard that the Philistines fled, even they also followed hard after them in the battle. So the Lord saved Israel that day, and the battle passed over unto Beth-Aven. And the men of Israel were distressed that day, for Saul had adjured the people, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food until evening, that I may be avenged on mine enemies. So none of the people tasted any food. And as I was studying for this, then Siobhan and I discussed this a while, that when someone makes an oath or swears something, and even if for a good thing, like what Saul did here, it's usually what it comes out to be is an exchange with God. Like, God, you give me this, and I'll give you this. Or, yeah, I'll do this, and I'll give you this. And so that's basically what Saul did here. Cursed be any man that eateth any food until evening. That's basically he commanded the people to fast, which, I mean, fasting is a good thing. But if you're doing an exchange for something, it's like, God, I'll fast, but you give me this for that. That is not the biblical way of doing that. And so none of the people tasted any food. And all the land came to a wood, and there was honey upon the ground. And when the people were come into the wood, behold, the honey dropped, but no man put his hand to his mouth, for the people feared the oath. But Jonathan heard not when his father charged the people with the oath. Wherefore he put the end of the rod that was in his hand, and dipped it in an honeycomb, and put his hand to his mouth, and his eyes were enlightened. Then answered one of the people and said, thy father straitly charged the people with an oath, saying, cursed be the man that eateth any food this day. And the people were faint. Then said Jonathan, my father hath troubled the land. See, I pray you, how mine eyes hath been enlightened because I tasted a little of this honey. How much more, if haply the people had eaten freely today of the spoil of their enemies, which they had found? For had there not been now a much greater slaughter among the Philistines? And they smote the Philistines that day from Michmash to Ajalon, and the people were very faint. And the people flew upon the spoil and took sheep and oxen and calves and slew them on the ground, and the people did eat with the blood. Then they told Saul, saying, Behold, the people sin against the Lord, in that they eat with the blood. And he said, Ye have transgressed. Roll a great stone unto me this day. Saul said, Disperse yourselves among the people, and say unto them, Bring me hither every man his ox, and every man his sheep, and slay them here, and eat. And sin not against the Lord in eating with the blood. And all the people brought every man his ox with him that night, and slew them there. And Saul built an altar unto the Lord. The same was the first altar that he built unto the Lord. And Saul said, Let us go down after the Philistines by night, and spoil them until the morning light. And let us not leave a man of them. And they said, Do whatsoever seemeth good unto thee. Then said the priest, Let us draw near hither unto God. And Saul asked the counsel of God, Shall we go down after the Philistines? Wilt thou deliver them into the hand of Israel? But he answered them not that day. And Saul said, Draw ye near hither, all the chief of the people, and know and see wherein this sin hath been this day. For, as the Lord liveth, which saveth Israel, though it be in Jonathan my son, he shall surely die. But there was not a man among all the people that answered him. Then said he unto all Israel, Be ye on one side, and I and Jonathan my son will be on the other side. And the people said unto Saul, Do what seemeth good unto thee. Wherefore Saul said unto the Lord God of Israel, Give a perfect lot. And Saul and Jonathan were taken, but the people escaped. And Saul said, Cast lots between me and Jonathan my son. And Jonathan was taken. Then said Saul to Jonathan, Tell me what thou hast done. And Jonathan told him and said, I did but taste a little honey with the end of the rod that was in mine hand, and lo, I must die. And Saul answered, God do and more also, for thou shalt surely die, Jonathan. And the people said unto Saul, Shall Jonathan die, who hath wrought this great salvation in Israel? God forbid, as the Lord liveth, there shall not one hair of his head fall to the ground, for he hath wrought with God this day. So the people rescued Jonathan, that he died not. Now, one thing that stands out to me in this passage, among other things, is Jonathan's obedience there. He was willing to die because his father said that he would be put to death. And he would have died if the people had not rescued him. And it stands out to me also that the people recognized that God had worked through Jonathan. And then going further on, in chapter 15, that going further along the same vein where Israel was at a low point, even though they had victories against the Philistines, Saul was going further and further downhill. Where he had good points in him and still had good points in him, and he never did lose his respect to God, you might say. But it further further on here we'll read more about about how Jonathan's father was going downhill. At chapter 15, verse 13. And Samuel said to Saul, and Samuel came to Saul, and Saul said unto him, Blessed be thou of the Lord, I have performed the commandment of the Lord. And Samuel said, What meaneth then this bleating of the sheep in mine ears, and the lowing of the oxen which I hear? And Saul said, They have brought them from the Amalekites, for the people spared the best of the sheep and oxen to sacrifice unto the Lord thy God, and the rest we have utterly destroyed. Then Samuel said unto Saul, Stay, and I will tell thee what the Lord hath said to me this night. And he said, Say on. Now, backtracking here a little bit, Samuel had told Saul, or God had told Saul through Samuel, that he was to go and smite Amalek and destroy that nation entirely because of sins that Amalek had done when the Israelites were going into Israel. And so Saul obviously had not done that here. And in verse 17, And Samuel said, When thou wast little in thine own sight, wast thou not made the head of the tribes of Israel? And the Lord anointed thee king over Israel. And the Lord sent thee on a journey and said, Go and utterly destroy the sinners, the Amalekites, and fight against them until they be consumed. Wherefore then didst thou not obey the voice of the Lord, but didst fly upon the spoil, and didst evil in the sight of the Lord? And Saul said unto Samuel, Yea, I have obeyed the voice of the Lord, and hath gone the way which the Lord hath sent me, and have brought Agag, the king of the Amalek, and have utterly destroyed the Amalekites. But the people took of the spoil, the sheep and the oxen, and the chief of things, which should have been utterly destroyed, to sacrifice unto the Lord God, Lord thy God, in Gilgal. And Samuel said, Hath the Lord as great delight in burnt offerings and sacrifices, as in obeying the voice of the Lord? Behold, to obey is better than sacrifice, and to hearken than the fat of rams. For rebellion as is the sin of witchcraft, and stubbornness as iniquity and idolatry. Because thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, he hath also rejected thee from being king. And so, much can be spoken of this passage, and I think, yeah, could be an entirely separate message here, so we'll go further on, speaking of Jonathan here. And now, for a while, then, we have no mention of Jonathan, and the story of David comes in here. Further, where David is anointed, and the story of David and Goliath, things that, and but I think we have, yeah, we'll pass over that. We hear a lot more about David than Jonathan, so we'll stay on the story of Jonathan for now. And so the next mention of Jonathan here, 18, verses 1 through 4. And it came to pass, when he had made an end of speaking unto Saul, that the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. And Saul took him that day, and would let him go no more to his father's house. Then Jonathan and David made a covenant, because he loved him as his own soul. And Jonathan stripped himself of the robe that was upon him, and gave it to David, and his garments, even to his sword, and to his bow, and to his girdle. Now, most of us would see like the friendship aspect of this, but and I don't think we fully understand the cultural significance of what Jonathan did there. Basically, Jonathan was saying that that this was his friend, and more than just a regular friend, that he esteems him greater than himself. And I think that the soul of Jonathan could sense David's soul, that David was a man after God's own heart, and Jonathan saw that and wanted to be with David. And like Jonathan stripping himself of the robe that was upon him, so in essence he gave him his kingly robe, and he gave to David his garments, even to his sword and to his bow and to his girdle. And one thing here, like his bow, Jonathan, as far as we know, Jonathan was the first person that used a bow in Israel. And he taught Israel to use the bow. It speaks about that further on. But him giving all his equipment was just basically saying that this is a better man than I am. And then going further on here, in chapter 19, verse 1. And Saul spake to Jonathan and his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. Now, more water has passed under the bridge here, and Saul has turned against David, seeing that God was with David. And I think that gives us a really large contrast in the difference between Saul and Jonathan. One, his soul was knit to the soul of David. The other one saw that God was with David and wanted to kill him. That's a really great contrast there. Mm-hmm. Embracing versus trying to put the other one down to make yourself greater. But Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, seeketh to kill thee. Now therefore, I pray thee, take to thyself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and hide thyself. And I will go out and stand beside my father in the field where thou art, and I will commune with my father of thee, and what I see, that I will tell thee. And Jonathan spake good of David unto Saul his father, and said unto him, Let not the king sin against his servant, against David, because he hath not sinned against thee, and because his works have been to thee word very good. Now, you can see here, it's in a lot of what we have read so far, Jonathan is taking the initiative. Jonathan is being a leader, not just because he was born into it, but his personality actually was the personality of a leader. He was a go-getter. He was a not a do-it-yourself person, but almost that. He was the one that led by example, led by being in front. And here he is speaking with David that he'll go out and basically just he'll take the brunt of it, be the one responsible for it. And yeah, verse 5, for he did put his life in his hand, and Jonathan speaking to Saul here, for he did put his life in his hand and slew the Philistine, and the Lord wrought a great salvation for all Israel. Thou sawest it and didst rejoice. Wherefore then wilt thou sin against innocent blood to slay David without a cause? And Saul hearkened unto the voice of Jonathan, and Saul sware, as the Lord liveth, he shall not be slain. And Jonathan called David, and Jonathan showed him all those things. And Jonathan brought David to Saul, and he was in his presence as in times past. And then going farther on here, chapter 20, verses 1 through 4. And David fled from Naioth in Ramah, and came and said before Jonathan, what have I done? What is mine iniquity? What is my sin before thy father, that he seeketh my life? And he said unto him, God forbid, thou shalt not die. Behold, my father will do nothing, either great or small, but that he will show it me. And why should my father hide this thing from me? It is not so. And David sware moreover, and said, thy father certainly knoweth that I have found grace in thine eyes. And he said, let not Jonathan know this, lest he be grieved. For truly, as the Lord liveth, and as my soul liveth, there is but a step between me and death. Then said Jonathan unto David, whatsoever thy soul desireth, I will even do it for thee. And then going further here, it speaks about how the feast was going to happen, and David hid, and Jonathan went there, and basically he again put his life in the line for David, where Saul threw a spear at his own son. Then going further here, verse 24 through 42. So David hid himself in the field. And this is speaking of the time where after Jonathan found out that Saul wanted to kill David, then they went out in the field. And so David hid himself in the field, and when the new moon was come, the king sat him down to eat meat. And the king sat upon his seat, as at other times, even upon a seat by the wall. And Jonathan rose, and Abner sat by Saul's side, and David's place was empty. Nevertheless, Saul spake not anything that day, for he thought, something hath befallen him, he is not clean, surely he is not clean. And it came to pass on the morrow, which was the second day of the month, that David's place was empty. And Saul said unto Jonathan his son, wherefore cometh not the son of Jesse to meet, neither yesterday nor today? And Jonathan answered Saul, David earnestly asked leave of me to go to Bethlehem. And he said, let me go, I pray thee, for our family hath a sacrifice in the city, and my brother, he hath commanded me to be there. And now, if I have found favor in thine eyes, let me get away, I pray thee, and see my brethren. Therefore he cometh not unto the king's table. Then Saul's anger was kindled against Jonathan, and he said unto him, thou son of the perverse and rebellious woman, do I not know that thou hast chosen the son of Jesse to thine own confusion and the confusion of thy mother's nakedness? For as long as the son of Jesse liveth upon the ground, thou shalt not be established, nor the kingdom. Wherefore now send and fetch him unto me, for he shall surely die. I think here that it wasn't Jonathan that was confused. It was Saul. Jonathan could see that God had chosen David. And I guess Saul didn't realize here that Jonathan did not want his kingdom to be established. He wanted David's kingdom to be established. Jonathan was putting himself under David. He was being subservient to him. He was going under David. And Jonathan answered Saul his father and said unto him, wherefore shall he be slain? What hath he done? And Saul cast a javelin at him to smite him, whereby Jonathan knew that it was determined of his father to slay David. So Jonathan arose from the table in fierce anger, and did eat no meat the second day of the month, for he was grieved for David, because his father had done him shame. And, you know, interestingly here, he didn't eat meat because he was upset, oh, my father tried to kill me. He was grieved for David. And it came to pass in the morning that Jonathan went out into the field at the time appointed with David and a little lad with him. And he said unto his lad, run, find out now the arrows which I shoot. And as the lad ran, he shot an arrow beyond him. And when the lad was come to the place of the arrow which Jonathan had shot, Jonathan cried after the lad and said, is not the arrow beyond thee? And Jonathan cried after the lad, make speed, haste, stay not. And Jonathan's lad gathered up the arrows and came to his master. But the lad knew not anything, only Jonathan and David knew the matter. And Jonathan gave his artillery unto the lad and said unto him, go, carry them to the city. And as soon as the lad was gone, David arose out of a place toward the south and fell on his face to the ground and bowed himself three times, and they kissed one another and wept one with another until David exceeded. And Jonathan said to David, go in peace, for as much as we have sworn both of us in the name of the Lord, saying, the Lord be between me and thee, and between my seed and thy seed forever. And he arose and departed, and Jonathan went into the city. So going further here, in chapter 23, verse 14. And David abode in the wilderness in strongholds, and remained in a mountain in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul saw him every day, but God delivered him not into his hand. And David saw that Saul was come out to seek his life, and David was in the wilderness of Ziph in a wood. And Jonathan, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. This verse here blessed me so much. About someone, a man, going to someone that's in need and strengthening his hand in God. I think we can pass over this verse easily and not understand the deep significance of it. What a blessing it is to someone that is at a very low point in his life, being hunted at a point that most of us have never, or probably all of us have never been at. I mean, maybe we felt depressed enough to feel like that, but we've never actually been in a position as bad as David was. And to have someone come to you and strengthen your hand in God. And I'm just wondering here, how many times do we do that? How many times do we encourage others in the Lord? How many times are we Jonathan and strengthen others in the Lord? And going further here, Jonathan speaking to David, and he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee, and that also Saul my father knoweth. And the two made a covenant before the Lord, and David abode in the wood, and Jonathan went to his house. Now, I've heard some people say that that Jonathan should have gone with David into the wilderness. And that might be the case. I'm not 100% certain about that. On the other hand, Jonathan did have responsibilities. He had a family that he needed to take care of as well. He had to help lead the children of Israel there against the Philistines and other nations that were attacking there. So I think that probably if he was free of responsibilities, he would have gone with David into the wilderness there. But sometimes we want to take the idealistic view that he should have just thrown everything off and gone with his friend. Well, I don't think, I think God is sometimes more practical than we give him credit for. And going further here, going back a little bit here, Jonathan's name means given of God, or God has given. Just keep that in mind, like when thinking of Jonathan, and what he did here. And I think literally he was given of God. God had given him to David, to be a blessing to him. Going further here, 2 Samuel chapter 1. And here, this is after Saul and Jonathan had died in the field of battle. And we won't read it here, but basically Jonathan was in the forefront of the battle. He wasn't one of those running away. And then he was slain there. And so reading at verse 11, "Then David took hold on his clothes and rent them, and likewise all the men that were with him. And they mourned and wept and fasted until even for Saul and for Jonathan his son and for the people of the Lord and for the house of Israel, because they were fallen by the sword." And then going further on here, verse 17, "And David lamented with this lamentation over Saul and over Jonathan his son. Also he bade them teach the children of Judah the use of the bow. Behold, it is written in the book of Jasher." Now this is in Hebrew, this is a poem. Like it's not as poetic in English as it is in Hebrew, but it's like poets would call this the Song of the Bow. "The beauty of Israel is slain upon thy high places. How are the mighty fallen? Tell it not in Gath, publish it not in the streets of Ashkelon, lest the daughters of the Philistines rejoice, lest the daughters of the uncircumcised triumph. Ye mountains of Gilboa, let there be no dew, neither let there be rain upon you, nor fields of offerings. For there the shields of the mighty, for there the shield of the mighty is vilely cast away, the shield of Saul, as though he had not been anointed with oil. From the blood of the slain, from the fat of the mighty, the bow of Jonathan turned not back, and the sword of Saul returned not empty. Saul and Jonathan were lovely and pleasant in their lives, and in their death they were not divided. They were swifter than eagles, they were stronger than lions. Ye daughters of Israel, weep over Saul, who clothe you in scarlet with other delights, who put on ornaments of gold upon your apparel. How are the mighty fallen in the midst of battle? O Jonathan, thou wast slain in thine high places. I am distressed for thee, my brother Jonathan. Very pleasant hast thou been unto me. Thy love to me was wonderful, passing the love of women. How are the mighty fallen, and the weapons of war perished?" You know, and here ends the story of Jonathan. It can seem like a depressing and sad ending, but Jonathan left a legacy behind him. And things that each one of us here can learn from him. When thinking back to what we spoke of early this morning about leadership, each one of us here is a leader in some way, shape, or form. Whether it's a church leader, whether it's a foreman at work, whether it's someone that has responsibilities that he's in charge, where he's in charge of, whether it's a father, whether it's a mother, or whether it's a child that will be some leader in the future. Each of us can learn from Jonathan how he submitted himself to someone greater than himself. Just like Cornelius showed that he knew Jesus was higher than him, each of us can do that. Each of us can submit to authorities that are higher than us. And we can see that Jonathan, he had no pride in that. He gave himself wholeheartedly to following David. And one other attribute that I can see of Jonathan that we can learn from is his trust and faithfulness to God. The trust and faithfulness are intertwined here to a degree. They can be different things, but I think over here they David's trust in God and his faithfulness to God. Jonathan portrayed that trust and faithfulness to God to a very high degree. When he went to fight the Philistines, he showed absolute trust in God. Just looking at it from a human perspective, he would have been out of his mind to go up there to fight the Philistines. But he said, if God is with us, then we can do it. And then also, Jonathan was a mentor. He He taught the children of Israel the use of the bow, which apparently back then was cutting-edge technology. And an interesting fact is that some of the men he taught came to David when he was in the wilderness. And it doesn't say so directly, but it speaks to them very highly that they were very skilled men that could use the bow, and they were relatives of Saul and Jonathan. And so I think that what Jonathan had taught them, he had taught them more than just the use of the bow. He had taught them respect, and also had probably passed on some of that love for David, and showed them that David was the next king of Israel, the true king. And so they took that to heart, and that shows me what kind of a mentor Jonathan was. And friendship, like we remember Jonathan for his friendship. But how many of us have actually thought that friendship is a Christian virtue? Like we would think like the virtues like love and integrity. What other virtues would there be? Honesty. I think that those are virtues, but friendship, we wouldn't exactly put that on the list of virtues. I mean, it's obviously a good thing, but you wouldn't think it's like exactly a virtue, something someone needs to have to be a man of God. But as I was studying it and seeing the friendship of Jonathan, the love of Jonathan for David, then it just showed me that friendship is actually something more important than just being cozy buddies that many of us make it out to be. In Luke, we read about Jesus. The Son of Man has come eating and drinking, and you say, "Behold, a gluttonous man, a winebibber, a friend of publicans and sinners." And I realize there's different kinds of friendship. And I think to some degree it boils down to influence. And here, Jesus was someone that was a companion of publicans and sinners, that he was ministering to them. And they called him a friend, friend of them. And speaking of love and friendship, in Jonathan 15, verse 13, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." It goes to a point where beyond friendship, where there's love. And I think if that kind of friendship should be our friendship, where there's love toward the person we are friends with. Proverbs 27, verse 17, "Iron sharpeneth iron, so a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend." The virtue of friendship, it encompasses a wide variety there. Encouraging a friend, helping a friend, teaching a friend. So a man sharpeneth the countenance of his friend. You know, being a friend isn't always, like as I said earlier, being cozy buddies. Sometimes it could mean being a true friend means saying things that are painful. I don't think Jonathan tried glossing things over with David. He told him how it was straight. And going further on here, another attribute of David, he was an encourager. And that goes along with his friendship. And that's something that each one of us can be as well, an encourager. And in closing here, just want to say that each one of us can take an example from Jonathan. Each one of us can put ourselves in a position of someone else that those people can say of us that God has given them to us. We can be content to just float along, just live our lives, and go out for coffee once in a while and be a good person. And when people think of us, it's like, yeah, they were a good friend, decent person. But can people think of us and say that God has given you in my life? Can each of us be in a place where other people say of us that God has given us to us and they are a blessing in my life? And I'd like to leave that encouragement to each one of us to be in that place. And if you're not in that place, to look for some place where you can submit to a higher authority, like Jonathan did, where you can be a friend that loved his fellow brother more than himself, where you can be an encourager, where you can strengthen other people's hands in the Lord, and where you can be a real friend and be a blessing to others. God bless you all.